are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, November 8th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Alex Perrine from the New Republic will be in studio with us. Then, later, on the phone, to give us a film recommendation for the weekend, Film Guy Matthew will be joining us. Also on the program, Bloomberg mulls a rum for Democratic 2020 primary. State Department official testifies that Giuliani... What is this? I can't even read it. Well, basically, the White House is looking to throw Giuliani under the bus. The State Department official testifies that Giuliani was running his own shadow policy. The non-governmental employee, Rudy Giuliani. Meanwhile, Trump has appointed one quarter of all circuit judges, more than Obama did in 8 years. U.S. weapons continue to flow into Yemen despite congressional attempts to stop that flow. Thousands of children neurologically damaged by lead contamination overwhelm Flint's special needs school programs. Donald Trump ordered to pay $2 million because his charity was so corrupt. And a professional referee apparently now is saying that he told Jim Jordan of the serial sex abuser that Jim Jordan refused to hear about. Tom Steyer aide offers money for endorsements. I should tell you, available. And New York Times polled Democrats at an all-time high for wanting a fighter versus a moderate. Trump administration quietly destroying our already dysfunctional immigration system. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk more about this as we go in the program. We'll play this clip. But before we get to any of that, I want to just say happy birthday to a teacher, Lauren. Longtime listener of this program. Pleasure to have you with us today. Folks, house cleaning, sign up for the AM Quickie. It is available now at amquickie.com, or you can find it on the Majority app. Go to majorityapp.com if you want to grab the app. We have been updating the app furiously. Kyle has been working overtime on this. And all the features that you loved in the past versions of the app and more are now in the app. So if you have the app, update the app. If you don't have the app, I don't know what's wrong with you. It's free. It's free. Also, a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. In studio with us right now, having just made his way into the building, ladies and gentlemen, Alex Perrine. Alex, what's your official title at the New Republic?
I'm a staff writer at the New Republic.
Okay, staff writer.
Nailed it.
Staff writer at the New Republic. I am. We didn't know when I asked you to come in this Friday, the news that we heard yesterday, but I am particularly excited that you'll have the opportunity to comment on the idea that Mike Bloomberg may jump into the race. It's highly there's a lot to chew on with with this.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not like Tom Steyer jumping into the race where it was going to have no impact. I don't know that it's possible to find an example in the history of anything where 48, probably up to like $57 million did less than what Tom Steyer's $57 million has done so far in his presidential campaign. It's almost like defies physics.
Right.
I mean, that's amazing. And they were buying endorsements in Iowa. Apparently nobody knew. Apparently this businessman who's really got his stuff together so much, his top lieutenant in Iowa was by, and nobody knew.
Of course, no.
I mean,
no
how could you? You know, he was doing it with petty cash.
Yeah.
He was doing it with the petty cash receipts. what do you call it, though? Judge of character, Tom Steyer.
Yeah, so, clearly.
Give him that. But here's one factor that's going to be interesting about Bloomberg entering the race. Because we have questions as to, how much will he damage Pete Buttigieg, for instance? Mm-hmm. How much will he damage Joe Biden?
Oh, man.
How much...
Gentrify them, Mike.
How much... get him. How much would Bernie or Warren have had to pay to ask Mike Bloomberg to come into the race so that they could just have, like, oh, thank you for giving us a predicate.
Yeah.
He's literally like a walking...
spoiler.
Well, not spoiler, but what do they call it?
Example of everything.
Yeah,
about.
What is it when they draw those like pictographs or whatever it is? Like, he is literally a walking example of why their whole policy. Well,
he's the living example of their argument for their campaigns.
Exactly. and
he's not going to peel off too many votes from them, I don't think.
No, that's the point. And that's why he would hurt Buttigieg. And then there's also another question, Jeff Hauser from the Revolving Door Project had an interesting tweet, which I don't necessarily think is the case, but apparently it's much cheaper to buy airtime if you're a candidate versus an outside PAC.
Interesting.
But when you're a billionaire,
it's not
hard
to buy.
You're gonna risk the humiliation of losing an election. Why wouldn't you just do it as a PAC anyways?
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not sure.
I don't know if I buy that. But here is also another factor that's going to be interesting is watching members of the media apparently become lightheaded and confused and saying some of the most ridiculous things in the world. I guess just because of a desire, such a deep desire to have what they perceive as a viable sort of like middle of the road, really at the end of the day, they're looking for people who are not going to upset the apple cart when it comes to the political economy.
Yeah.
And here's Chuck Todd on MSNBC in what is like, this almost feels like the outtake. Like, you know, we had that story the other day of that woman on ABC talking about the Epstein story.
Yeah.
You know, when the feed runs and they're not on air.
Right.
It sort of feels like that because it's so disoriented, it seems like. But here is Chuck Todd.
Guns and climate. Who's to his left?
Well, pause it for 1 second. Beto. He's asking, who is to the left of Michael Bloomberg on guns and climate? And climate.
Climate's the interesting one there.
Climate's really this sort of... I mean, guns, there's actually just a couple answers.
Yeah.
But with climate, it's like, how could you even ask that question? Go ahead.
Guns and climate. Who's to his left?
Well, Beto
Beto was to his left on guns, but he's not going to be a factor any longer.
Right? I mean, so...
Also the governor of...
You can make an argument. Bloomberg
has embraced the Green New...
I don't think he's embraced that. I agree. Right.
That's one area where he actually is more to the center than she is.
You know, in the
pause it for one second. Not just she is. Incidentally, there's another person in the race who is also to the left of Bloomberg on the climate. I mean, not to mention also Jay Inslee, and perhaps
the governor.
Maybe,
that was. Did you catch that? Was with Barnacle? Did you catch that? That's Barnacle, right?
No, that was not Barnacle. That's
Howard Feynman was going. There's the governor.
Then he couldn't remember.
I don't think he was talking about the Green.
He was talking about Inslee. He's trying to find Inslee.
I think he was trying
name.
To think of Inslee's name, but I'm
yeah,
not
that's
actually
what he
sure.
was trying to do.
How many? How long did it take us to get through that clip? So far.
That's 19 seconds. So
19
far.
Seconds. That's like... pretty amazing that you can deliver with like a genuine question and get two solid answers that completely demolish the premise of your question. That's quick.
Yeah.
The Green New Deal is so far more aggressive on climate change than anything Michael Bloomberg has ever talked about. Yes, bike lanes, super important. I'm very happy to have them in the city. But both Warren and Sanders have subscribed to the Green New Deal. I would bet that even like Harris and Booker are probably somewhere, somewhere
Bernie
at least
wrote a Green New Deal, which is significantly more comprehensive than any of them.
Yes, exactly.
I mean,
yeah. But what's their policy on giant soft drinks? They've been weirdly silent on that issue.
Yeah, that's part of the environment.
Where they are on Slurpees. Continue.
I don't think he's embraced that. I agree.
So that's one area where he actually is more to the center than she is.
You know, in the smoke-filled room, you'd say, on paper, Bloomberg has the right balance of what you want to win a broad election. Maybe not a deep election, but if you're trying to win the ex-suburban Republican, which, by the way, Michael Bloomberg's an ex-suburban Republican.
Well, pause it for one second.
What is an ex? Is an ex-suburban Republican a Republican who formerly lived in the suburbs?
Or a former Republican who lives in the
suburbs?
Wait,
or whose only political position was being mayor of the largest city in the country?
You are a political... You write about politics.
I do, yes.
What does that mean, a deep election as opposed to a wide election?
I think...
Very deep.
I think what he means is like a lot of people like him a little bit instead of a small amount of people liking him a lot.
I understand that concept, but which elections can you win with a little people liking you a lot?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure.
Like, who runs that campaign? What kind of election? What scenario
would you
is
be
that?
Like? You know, not a lot of people like this guy, but. The ones who do really like it.
I'm reasonably well-liked by all of you slobs. I'm running for third place.
Yes.
And that's where you want the narrow – that's the narrow election.
Right.
I'm just curious about – I've never just – I don't understand what that term means.
Maybe it's like a dog whistle for appealing to moderates.
I don't think so, but here go.
What you want to win a broad election, maybe not a deep election, but if you're trying to win the suburban – the ex-suburban Republican – which, by the way, Michael Bloomberg's an ex-suburban, arguably an ex-urban Republican.
Yeah, pause
at the same time.
Okay, so he's an ex. So,
they need
so the
to
point
win
is
the
he's
ex-urbs.
Looking at the ex-Republicans.
Yes, ex-Republicans.
Former Republicans.
Yeah.
Who presumably have left the Republican Party.
Right.
Right? So why would they vote for Donald Trump under any circumstance? Right. Why would they not be getting, but go ahead.
Arguably an ex-urban Republican. And at the same time, you care about these core progressive issues like guns and climate. it ain't just somebody buying an election.
No, I'm trying to think of Michael Bloomberg as the nominee in Western Pennsylvania.
I know what you're thinking.
The suburbs of Michigan, Michigan suburbs, the Ohio suburbs, the Wisconsin suburbs.
By the way, there's only one running mate for him.
Huh?
It's the same running mate Joe Biden.
All right, pause it. Before we get to this, this whole weirdness that comes up. Feynman's trying to picture Bloomberg appealing to the white working class.
The white working class
that we
Western
keep hearing about
Pennsylvania,
in Western Pennsylvania. I would also add, I would like to see Mike Bloomberg also appeal to let's say, black people in Philadelphia would be hard to imagine.
Or for that matter,
black people in Milwaukee,
black people.
Or white working class people in the outer Wisconsin counties, or black people in Michigan, or white people in Michigan.
Yeah, I was gonna, yeah,
or while we're or, at it, like who is Mike specific Bloomberg to going example. To appeal to? Maybe Florida.
What about Arab people in Michigan and Muslim people in Michigan? I mean,
that may
we're
also
talking
be a
about like another additional layer, in like the one state where it's like, oh, on top of his general mass non-appeal to African Americans and working people of every background, we also have a guy who presided over like basically
mass
CIA
surveillance.
Mass surveillance of like a key demographic in a pivotal swing state.
I mean, if anything, he'd help this like broad multiracial working class coalition unite in hatred of him.
I mean, this is but just like this type of analysis. Now, on some level, I have mixed feelings about this because I think that he really is going to. It's a bizarre play on his part unless he thinks he's setting up maybe some type of third party run.
Yeah.
If like a Warren or a Sanders wins, but beyond that. He's almost, it seems to me, like going to cut in to parts of Biden and to
the white,
whatever is there for Buttigieg.
Yeah.
Because those are the only people who even know him.
Right. That's exactly
thing,
right.
Like, people don't know who Mike Bloomberg is across the country. Like Rudy Giuliani, when he was mayor of New York, the America's mayor, he was America's mayor. He couldn't even get out of New Hampshire. Here is Chuck Todd. Now, basically, just throwing this out. I mean, I think he's right, but it's just a weird sort of like, here's a guy who's never going to win, but here's who he would need for his vice president nominee.
Trying to think of Michael Bloomberg as the nominee in Western Pennsylvania.
I know what you're thinking.
The suburbs of Michigan, the Michigan suburbs, the Ohio suburbs, the Wisconsin suburbs.
By the way, there's only one running mate for him.
Huh?
It's the same running mate Joe Biden has to pick, and it's the same running mate Pete Buttigieg has to pick. It's Stacey Abrams, by the way. Like, there's nobody else that Bloomberg can match up with if he somehow got this nomination than Stacey Abrams.
Sure.
Why? Yes.
I think he has to have a person of color. I think he needs a diversity on the ticket, person of color, no?
I'm just trying to think of
Selling. No, wait a second. I want to go back here. Did you see what just happened here? I mean, this is what's so weird about what's going on here. Like, I'm actually genuinely concerned for Chuck Todd here. Because he's laying out every single one of his premises has been shot down throughout this entire thing. Yeah. And as Feynman is basically saying, I can't come up with a single element of the Democratic Party that's going to vote for Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going around to just about every sort of key demographic, and I can't even imagine. And so Todd doesn't even want to hear that. He immediately goes to, I've got one that's going to win. It's Stacey Abrams. Now, just to give you a sense of how rudimentary this is, the idea that the Democrats would put up a ticket, regardless of who is at the top of that ticket, where the ticket does not reflect black people or brown people in this country, is just absurd. Mm-hmm. Like there's no amount of money that I would be not willing to wager that the presidential ticket will reflect a gender and race diversity.
Mm.
I mean, you'd have to be an idiot not to do that. But he is really like, and then he just gets shot down. And
you ever hear of
moment.
A guy named Stacey, of a woman named Stacey Abrams?
And there's only one person of color in politics.
I want you just to look at, and look, we've all been there. I have some sympathy for this because there's been times I've felt embarrassed when everything I said, everybody rejects. Mostly that happens at home. But here is, watch Chuck Todd take a sip of water after Howard Feynman goes, why?
Nobody else that Bloomberg can match up with if he somehow got this nomination than Stacey Abrams.
Why? Yes.
I think he has to have a person of color.
Huh?
I think he needs a diversity on the ticket, person of color, no?
I don't know what he would need. I'm just trying to think of Bloomberg selling nationally in the nitty-gritty of the key swing places. Maybe he can.
I didn't think New York City.
Right.
But I thought that was a problem for Trump. Like, I think we all thought New York City doesn't sell in America. And yet, what were the two nominees?
Well, Trump was the candidate from The Apprentice. He wasn't the candidate from New York.
I just think New York.
And the guy that talks their language, which Michael Bloomberg doesn't.
Right. No, but I do think that. I don't think that's going to be as problematic.
I think
as
Republicans
could have been even a decade.
No, Republicans are ready to hit him on the two issues you just said, right? Climate and guns. They're going to paint him as Elizabeth Warren. He is that extreme, is what they're going to say.
Sure, but Elizabeth Warren's going to paint him as a closet right winger. So in some ways, he's going to be. He could be bookended well. Maybe.
Right, because as you know, your typical Republican voter. Listens to Elizabeth Warren
Sam,
for cues for her
Sam, yeah. You don't cues. Get it. He's gonna be.
You don't understand. So the thing is, with Bloomberg, it'll be easy for Republicans to hate him, and it'll be easy for Democrats to hate him, and that's exactly where you want to be.
That's the sweet spot.
Right where you want to be.
What part aren't you getting? Everybody will detest him. And
as opposed to depth, it's not even like, it's not just not only not deep, it's not just wide, it's actually transcendent. It floats over the electorate, and that's the way that he gets elected.
It's peak, I guess, like cable news brain to have thought it through by the end of the little segment there, to have been like, what you got to understand is that. Like this half of the voters will not like him and the other half of the voters won't like him. That's why he's got a real shot.
I think that the heartland is crying out to be lectured about gulpies.
Folks, support for today's show comes from Mova Globes. As you can see, I've got two of them now, right?
Wow.
I know. I was supposed to bring this one to Saul. And I now am like starting to think like I sort of like having two on the desk. Mova Globes turn on their own, with a base or without a base, doesn't matter. No batteries are needed, no cords, nothing like that. Instead, hidden magnets provide the movement. Gets a little bit hypnotic, folks. I gotta be honest with you. They have over 40 different designs, including world maps, outer space. Famous artworks. There's something for everybody. The outer space collection I am holding here in my hand. Well, not the entire collection, just one of them. These feature graphics from NASA and JPL. I'm not sure what JPL stands for. I don't know what that is. But complete with planets, moons, asteroid, constellation designs. Great gift for the person who has everything or for the person who doesn't have a globe, or the person who loves globes. You could have a ton of globes, and this would make an even better
gift. If you had a ton of globes, you probably want more.
JPL is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
There you go. Now, for me, I'm a big fan of the vintage maps. 1791.
I have to say, this picture is going to get memed right here.
Oh, yeah. Globe emoji.
There's one that shows the three voyages of Captain James Cook. There's ones like this one, which is what, and I'm psyched to take this home to Saul. This is what the Earth looks like if you're in a spaceship.
Sun, this is the globe.
Here you go.
Look deep.
They hypnotized. Have famous artwork globes. They have Mars. They have other planets, Uranus. There's all sorts of different planets. Yeah, I know. Saul wants the Uranus one. But they're really great. And we end up, I noticed Michael has the same problem that
exactly
I do, too.
The same.
They become like sort of like, I don't know, worry beads or what
literally you what it is. It's a giant worry bead.
MovaGlobes.com/majority. Head over there. Use the code majority. Get 10% off your purchase. That's Mova, MOVA, globes.com/majority. Use the code majority. Get 10% off your purchase.
Beautiful.
I love these things.
It's a really beautiful.
I mean, I think. If you check back on this show in about 4 years, I have a feeling there's going to be like 15 of these things right on the desk.
Oh, definitely.
Really alienating all the flat earthers out there.
Yeah, sorry about that, folks.
I'm a flat earther and I appreciate it.
Yeah, so you can
appreciate it.
You can appreciate it.
Fictional representation of the Earth.
I like it aesthetically. I mean, obviously, I know what the Earth is. I mean, I'm not an idiot, but I do like the aesthetics of it.
Folks, I've talked to you about this before. Hiring can be a slow process. That's not good if you need somebody in your office quick. Cafe Altura's COO, this guy Dylan Moskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. He was having trouble finding a qualified applicant. He switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter, said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. That's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. Well, Dylan's got his story. I have mine. Brendan over there came through ZipRecruiter.
Oh,
hi, Brendan.
And we had so many qualified folks. I interviewed, I don't know, maybe a dozen people, all of whom I thought could have done the job. Not as well as Brendan, of course, but pretty close. And Brendan came to us through ZipRecruiter. It was the smartest thing I feel like I've done on a business level, arguably ever.
Wow.
It was easy. Like, you know, other hires came through Craigslist, and that was always not successful, I will say. And it's hard to organize it. This organizes it for you. It allows you to rate it. Also allows you to bank for future hires. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for business of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Yes, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And lastly, one of today's sponsors is BetterHelp. They're giving our audience 10% off their first month when you go to betterhelp.com/majority report. BetterHelp gives you access to your own fully licensed and accredited therapist via phone, chat, or video. When you sign up, they match you with a therapist based on your specific needs, and you'll be communicating with that therapist in less than 24 hours. If you're not happy with the therapist at any time, month into it, 2 months into it, after one session, doesn't matter. You can switch to a new one for any reason at no additional charge. They have over 3,000 licensed therapists from all over the country, so they have therapists with specialties that may not be available in your area. This means you don't have to get into a car. Means you don't have to go to an office. You don't have to take the subway. You don't have to sit around in a waiting room. You can do everything from the comfort of your own home. BetterHelp also tends to be more affordable than traditional in-person therapy, and they have financial aid options if you qualify. They're giving everyone in our audience 10% off your first month when you go to betterhelp.com/majority report. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/majority report. If you've always wondered about starting in therapy and you've never done it before, I mean, I've over the years had a lot of therapy. This is a great way to sort of to get started. You don't have any of the other things that often will intimidate people about that process. So check it out. That's BetterHelp. What is it? BetterHelp.com/majority report. All right. So getting back to this, Alex, we have we've got multiple things going on now. We are in full impeachment. I don't know where we were the last time we talked about impeachment, but let's start with that.
Sure.
And then we'll go into the election, because it's been sort of fascinating to see what's been happening in terms of the pushback, like the fear as reflected. We're getting a lot of the reaction shots these days about what's happening in the Democratic primary. But before we get there, impeachment, let's work our way backwards. So we'll start with process. The Democrats have announced what their timeline is.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, I'm of two minds of this, but it's also, I don't want to get, there seems to be, maybe there's a couple agendas here. They are going to have all the witnesses speak over the next couple of weeks. They are hoping to have the full vote in the House before Christmas. We can talk about the politics of this, but there's some like sort of like specific things about the process. One is, it could mean that the vote in the Senate takes place before the filing deadline for primary challenges against
the six or seven Republican senators who are afraid to take this vote. They don't want to vote for impeachment and then have, you know, somebody jump in the race.
Yeah.
The other thing that occurs to me is that it's going to mean, if it is in the Senate during these 3 months, right before Iowa,
right,
it's going to mean that if you're a senator and you're running for president, you're going to have to be in the Senate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're not a senator and you're running for president, you can be in Iowa.
Right.
Now, couple that with Nancy Pelosi jumping into the 2020 race at the beginning of this week, talking about Medicare for all as a, you know, political nightmare. Am I being childish to say, like, hey, wait a second, if I can figure this out and I know who the senators are, there's three front runners. Let's say there's four front runners right now. Two of them are going to be locked in the Senate up until Iowa, through Iowa. Two of them are going to be able to go on the campaign trail and spend all their time in Iowa.
Right.
Just coincidentally, they're the two who are not for Medicare for all. They're the two who are not for basically what Nancy Pelosi crapped on the other day. Am I being a little bit?
I don't. I mean, I think that's. I think it's obvious that the timeline is being done for political reasons and not because it's what the sort of information dictates or what the actual sort of case dictates. I think that it's clearly a political timeline.
Well, I have no problem with that.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like, what is the political agenda?
Yes.
Is what is bothering me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it will, like, when it goes, I guess it's the question is, like, I don't know. I mean, I still don't know what it's going to look like in the Senate, what McConnell's going to do. Because it is like, how long will it last in the Senate? How long is he going to let this trial go on in the Senate?
It's an interesting question. I would think McConnell would say, like, let's do this quick.
For what it's worth, if it's quick, it could be a campaign highlight reel for both of them. Like, for any of them in the Senate, right? Like, if it's quick, on the other – I mean, it's bad they're not in Iowa. But on the other hand, excoriating Trump on TV every day is not exactly bad for you. You're running in a Democratic primary.
That's true, but the value of being on the ground in Iowa in the run-up to Iowa is huge, and
especially for a sort of populist campaign like Sanders.
Of course, and you're also absent. So, you know, we're here at the Iowa Plankety Blank picnic, and here's Pete Buttigieg. Where's everybody else?
Yeah,
it's just Joe Biden.
I love being here eating cotton candy, explaining why you shouldn't have health care.
Like, it seems to me, and of course, this is all political, right? Like, there's nothing, and it should be political.
Well, obviously, yeah.
They should make the decision, like, this is helpful to Democrats. Let's look at other stuff. You know, there's a story on the margins about other whistleblowers. I don't know if this is true. There's a story on the margin about Jared Kushner involving the Saudi Arabia. I don't know if it's true because I haven't seen it really anywhere that I think like has provided enough support. But there are it's hard.
You mean around Khashoggi?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine that this was just the one time that like Trump didn't play by the rules.
Yeah, right. Right. And this is, I mean, my thing with the timeline is if you want to do this narrowly, they could have already had the vote in the House because we already know on this one thing they're investigating, we know the facts.
Right.
But what keeps happening is that they keep uncovering additional things and then just sort of like moving on or like not getting to the bottom of them.
Right. Every new piece of evidence that edifies the last piece of evidence is actually functioning to diminish the relevance of the earlier evidence, which was indicted and an indictment in and of itself.
Right. Right. So, I mean, what I sort of wanted from the beginning was to just sort of dig into everything and just like, because I just don't think that there's not gonna be an appetite for it after this process is done. And this is the time now when you actually are like justified in pulling all these threads because they're not going to go back to them when the election's in full swing.
Right.
So like whatever, like the supposed IRS whistleblower, I don't know what's going on with that. Like these other calls that were like locked in the secret vault. Like, are they going to follow up on that? Like, I'm not sure. But they're barreling towards this close. And to me, it's like, if you were going to do just about the Ukraine call and quid pro quo, you had the evidence on that day one. So I don't know.
The only thing I could say, like, you know, that that undercuts my theory about, or could cut the other way with my theory about, you know, taking them off the table in Iowa.
Yeah.
Because I think that, look, if Joe Biden was to win Iowa, I think it would be very difficult for Sanders or Warren to win this primary.
I think so.
Because, I mean, I think Iowa is crucial to Biden. And I think if Biden comes in third in Iowa and in New Hampshire, I think that's going to undercut him dramatically. Yep. And if he comes in fourth in one of those states, he's done.
Yeah.
He's, I don't, you know, like, I don't, he can go to South Carolina, but who cares?
Right.
It's because it's just going to be a measure of how much he's lost support.
Yeah.
It's not going to go up. Mm-hmm. And so, but if Biden wins in Iowa or comes in second in Iowa, I think that like is he, that would be a huge win for him.
Yeah.
Now with that said, you still have the same problem. If the trial starts in like March.
Sure. Yeah. They're going to be locked in the Senate.
You're not going to go to Super Tuesday. You're not going to be able to campaign. I mean, so maybe there is pressure on Pelosi to try and wrap this up even before the even before Iowa. And maybe the bet is that McConnell is perfectly happy to see Warren and Warren and Bernie win in Iowa as opposed to Biden.
Yeah.
There's no reason why he would subscribe to the notion that like,
I was reading Eric Levitt's piece. Exactly.
I think Democratic voters are ready for.
I was listening to all of this bickering, and I think Sam Cedar's out of touch with the modern electorate.
Exactly. So it's quite possible he'll rush it through, too. I mean, I don't know why they linger.
And I guess Roberts will technically be
running
too,
it. Yes. Yeah. And the question, you know, then will be like, will Roberts let, like, now we move on to the phase of Hunter Biden in the case?
he should be impeached. Dude. He should be impeached. If you have an impeachment, let's have a fair impeachment.
I mean, what is your sense of what's happening now? Like, I mean, how do you think that the Republicans are doing in terms of their pushback on this?
It's, I don't know. The Republicans, it's funny because I think the ones who actually have some exposure to reality are like kind of panicky. But like there's so many of them don't have any exposure to reality. And I do, I feel like they're, you know, the sort of sense that there's a sense that sort of pundits get sometimes that Republicans also share that like all news is good news for Trump. And I do, I don't know, I think you see some of that. There's definitely like, you know, I do wonder how many senators, Republican senators, are legitimately waffling on this because they've caved on just about everything else, you know? Like if you couldn't get anyone to vote, well, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's different from the Kavanaugh vote because that was actually like a tangible win for them. So this is not like you're not getting a win by sort of protecting Trump in that sense. But I'm not sure that like.
Well, you're avoiding Trump. I mean, here's the thing: is that if Trump was not a child, he would say, Susan, I understand.
Yeah.
You're facing a tough election. I want to own the Senate if we get reelected.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cory Gardner, look, you're a good guy, like, sort of a girl name. But, you know.
Yeah, like, but, yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't it be funny if you said that?
But I think they legitimately, and I think with reason, I think Susan Collins is worried that if she votes for impeachment,
then
Trump is going to campaign against her.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, you got that really, I mean, LaBarge is right there. LePage.
LePage,
I mean, and he is like, not only is he absolutely insane, I mean, he's one of these guys like between him and Arpaio, they're sort of like the Trump prototypes.
Right.
I mean, she's in, I was talking with Nathan Bernard about this a little bit because he's up in Maine covering this stuff. And she's maybe the ultimate no-win situation. Because it's a legit slight Democratic lean state, but from a primary perspective,
Cory Gardner. It seems
this
to
isn't
me
like Massachusetts in a very or Vermont situation. Republican
right.
Party.
Yeah,
like the Maine Republican Party is crazy.
They're nuts.
Yeah,
other New England Republican parties are a little bit more like of that older kind of.
Which
like,
is why only Susan Collins is the only senator from the Republican Party in the entire New England,
and why Baker and the guy in Vermont back impeachment.
Right.
Yeah.
the, you know, Cory Gardner has the same problem. It seems like Joni Ernst thinks she does.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe Tom Tillis does as well, to a certain extent. And I think he's got the bigger problem where of a primary. Like, you know, yeah, you start getting into states like that, you start to worry about a primary more.
Yeah.
So it's
I get the feeling most of these are a lot more scared of a primary, and like not just like because the Republican. Yeah, I mean, it's like the main Republican Party issue too, where Collins from a distance, you're like she reflects the mainstream values of New England, but it's like her base of support is like half raving crazy people.
Right.
And it's enough. It's enough to.
So she can go to general election and go, you may have disagreed with me, but I represent blah, blah. And a Republican Party, they're going to be like, she's a communist.
Yeah.
Right.
We didn't realize she's actually a Muslim Black Panther. And we didn't know that. We'd suspected it.
Let's watch this clip from Fox and Friends, since we're talking about impeachment, and then we will move on to sort of the race after. Maybe we'll do a couple of impeachment stuff just to get a sense of it.
Oh, this is great.
So Mark Levin has a very specific take on impeachment. He is he has a Sunday night show on Fox. He also has that partners in the Blaze, Dave Rubin's Blaze, and. Here is Mark Levin. Mark Levin featured on Fox and Friends. I just love it when the Fox and Friends guys are like, that guy's really crazy.
Here we go. Mark Levin took a look at all of this stuff that we're talking about regarding this email, the back and forth on the private account. He had this observation last night with Sean Hannity.
Who's ever heard of a whistleblower who is someone who's backed by the establishment? You know, normally you have a whistleblower who's challenging the establishment, challenging the system. You have the entire establishment, the media, the Democrat Party, part of the Republican Party in the Senate, backing a whistleblower. I've really never seen anything like this. It's really bizarre. The reason you have whistleblower protections is because the whistleblower is going against the system. In this case, we have the president going against the system and the whistleblower going against the president of the United States.
I thought about it like that.
It's a great way to put it. Maybe the actual whistleblower is the president of the United States who went to Washington, D.C. to disrupt the status quo in the establishment.
Well, he's a disruptor, but
maybe he's blowing the whistle on all of Washington.
On himself.
Exactly. 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 Maybe this is all a time simulation. Maybe we're in an alien's imagination and I'm blowing the whistle on the whole situation.
I'm blowing the whistle on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't this QAnon?
I'm the whistleblower.
Yeah.
Isn't that what basically that the actually basically of QAnon is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That Trump is in there and he's just like everything he's doing and the entire Mueller investigation was just to smoke out Hillary and I mean that's the idea that you can't be a whistleblower if you're blowing the whistle on the president of the United States.
Because
you're not the establishment, you're the establishment.
Yeah, because the White House is against the establishment. Because the whistleblower is against the White House, it's difficult.
The White House is Rebel HQ.
Rebel HQ. You know how disgusting it's been to pretend to be associated with the mafia, and take bribes? I've had to pretend to be corrupt for so many years so I can finally blow the whistle.
We should say that the CIA chief was also picked by Donald Trump.
Right.
Following in the footsteps of the other CIA chief that he picked.
But she was involved in torture. And we're going to need to expose that.
Can't trust the CIA. So
yes, Rasta didn't work in the CIA.
I mean, this is what they're doing. I don't think it has much relevance. I mean, that's my sense is with impeachment at the end of the day is that like none of these details matter at this point.
Right.
Like, as you know, we've gotten to the point where the Democrats can sell it to the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Which was the biggest hurdle in my mind.
Right.
Because nothing else beyond that, I don't think the voter is going to go into the booth really worried about the details of impeachment. It is he was impeached and it gives them a very clear and the opponents of any Republican who voted for impeachment a very clear marker.
Mm-hmm.
You are with Donald Trump. It doesn't even matter like what policy divergences you have. Like when push came to shove, you protected Trump.
Yeah.
And that's all it's going to end up being. It's going to be far more relevant in these senatorial races and these House races than the actual, I think, general election. I don't think Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Pete Buttigieg or Michael Bloomberg as the Democratic nominee are going to get up there and go like, you're impeached. Like, honestly. Like,
I think you're totally right.
I don't think they're ever going to mention, you know, it will be just like, you're disgusting. You're impeached. You're blank. You're this, you're that. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like the highlight of the presidential campaign.
No, but it's going to matter in congressional races.
In a big, big way, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just look in. Donald Trump did address impeachment. Now,
we did Fast and Furious to blow the whistle.
Exactly.
It was a war against the deep state. Exactly, Rachel. That's what Rachel was saying. And by the way, I thought it was a tremendous point.
Now, on Wednesday, Donald Trump had some very, very specific things to say about impeachment. He was very – this is in Monroe, Louisiana, where he was down there campaigning for Kennedy, right? Running for
isn't Kennedy challenging John Bel Edwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here it is.
But the whistleblower, before they knew I was going to release, he came out with a whistleblower, you know, like he's some wonderful person. Take a look at the whistleblower. But the whistleblower came out with this horrible statement about this call. So I really had no choice. I said immediately, talk about transparency. I said, release it. Release it immediately. And then the whistleblower saw it, and Shifty Schiff saw it, who's a total crook. Schiff saw it. Pelosi saw it. And they said, we got a problem. We don't want to have anything to do with the whistleblower anymore. And the whistleblower disappeared. You know who else disappeared? The second whistleblower. And you know who else disappeared? The informer to the whistleblower, if there was such a person, which I doubt. Which I doubt. So here it is. This just came out. Just came out. It's a disgrace. I'll tell you what. It's so bad. These people are bad people, and it's so bad what they do to our country. They rip the guts out of a country, and it's a shame, and they shouldn't be allowed to do it. And people should stop. Maybe go to the Supreme Court, maybe, but they got to stop it, because we have a country to run. And these people, in order to do things, are willing to do illegal acts. It's an illegal act, as far as I'm concerned.
It's an illegal act. Now, there's a couple of things that are telling about this. You will notice that people behind him are not wearing T-shirts that say read the transcript like he had earlier in the week, because he found out like that's a little bit of a dud.
Right.
And he held up a piece of paper. I don't know what
didn't explain what the paper was.
Nope.
He said, here it is. They just released it.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you about the thing that is going to completely sink Donald Trump. I'm holding it here in my hand. Now,
they should stop it, maybe go to the Supreme Court.
People should do things, illegal act. Illegal act. It is ripping out the guts of our country. But by Friday, he seemed a little bit like maybe slightly different medication.
I'm not concerned about anything. The testimony has all been fine. I mean, for the most part, I never even heard of these people. I have no idea who they are. They're some very fine people. You have some never-Trumpers. It seems that nobody has any first-hand knowledge. There is no first-hand knowledge.
Now, of course, there's multiple people with first-hand knowledge. And to the extent that he's not aware of, like, who Bill Taylor is, maybe that's because they were running a shadow operation in terms of their diplomacy with Ukraine that he wasn't aware of, like, wait a second, you let Serpico on the team? What are you doing? Shadow only, shadow.
Serpico.
If he doesn't have the code ring, you don't let him in.
Bill, you could take your piece of the St. Jude's Hospital scam and give it to another children's
hospital. That's right, exactly.
But I'd feel more comfortable if you were part of the St. Jude's
it's
Hospital scam.
It's just not cool, man. People won't trust you.
It's a good Trump defense, because it's actually as relatable as I don't know these guys, because like you just forget some of their names sometimes. You're like Zelensky. Like Trump should just go down that route.
Yeah.
It's just being like, yeah, it's just so many guys. Who can remember all these guys?
wait a second, Rudy who?
We're like a month from that.
He was not the lawyer. He was not the lawyer.
I love when he pivots, actually, because sometimes he will do that.
Yeah,
and
he'll
then
be
the
like,
next day he talks about what a horrible person. I love where it's either like, I mean, I didn't really know them that well. And then the next day it's like, I know him for 30 years. One of the worst people you've ever seen.
There is, you know, at least some rumblings and maybe some type of test balloon. That they're going to cut Rudy loose.
They're
going to say, like, yeah, Rudy was running the shadow thing, and the president didn't know anything about it.
I thought what Rudy did with the emergency headquarters in 9/11 was a disgrace.
I thought it was a total disgrace. And you had Judith Regan there, and they're publishing books, and it's a terrorist
WT7. Why did they do that? Why? Because there was diesel fluid.
Steel beams don't melt themselves, Rudy. You're fired. Or you weren't fired because you weren't working with me.
Yeah, I don't.
Excuse me.
Exactly. Look, he was not paid, and he wasn't. He was an unpaid lawyer.
Bernie Carrick is taking it. That was supposed to be
unpaid by
first.
Trump.
Unpaid
first
by Trump, right. Using it as a platform to get to reap other money. That's an interesting dynamic. I wonder if that comes into play. Like, I wasn't even paying him.
Right.
When I said he was my lawyer, I meant like, he was my friend who was a lawyer.
Wow. Between him and Michael Cohen, it seems like Trump's friends really care about him.
I'm
Trump's lawyers.
If choosing bad lawyers is a crime, guilty. But only if that.
But only if.
You know what's great is awesome is that he actually wouldn't be able to say that. So it'd have to be like, I knew they were a bad lawyer. And they're terrible, but I'm such a good friend that I felt bad for them.
Right.
And so I get punished for all the good deeds I do. Never let a good deed go unpunished.
Right, exactly.
I said,
try
Rudy,
to be a good friend.
Yeah. Rudy's down on his luck. He's pathetic. It's sad. He actually was a terrible mayor. He asked for an unpaid internship. I said, okay, because I'm a great friend.
Chris Christie told me to hire him.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the 2020 election. The one thing, I mean, Sanders' campaign seems to be basically just rolling along, gaining to some extent. Really, the only person who seems to be moving up in any type of like, it's not a straight shot up.
Yeah,
but it's like a, you know, an airplane taking off a little bit, not a rocket. But nobody seems to be, you know, Biden seems to be sort of just slowly leaking oil, as he has been since, you know, for months.
Yeah.
Warren seems to be sort of like going through a little bit of turbulence.
Yeah. She's been sort of up and down, I feel like.
Yeah. But hanging in there, doing well. Buttigieg just seems to like, you know, if you were to actually sort of like take a poll of all the newsrooms, you know, doing great, but not
but
going
like
anywhere.
Actually, yeah.
I'm reading about the Klobuchar surge, which I think is like building her from like 1.7% popularity to 2.3%, which is a 33% gain.
Yes.
So that
is there you go. Like by the numbers.
It's a surge.
Yeah.
But if Bloomberg jumps into the race, I don't see how this hurts anybody but Biden and Buttigieg.
No, I mean, so Bloomberg, if he's doing this, I sort of can't believe he is. I can talk about this for the rest of the day, too, because it's so weird. He's had a lot of opportunities to run, and he's surrounded by people who've been telling him to run for years. And at the last minute, every single time, he, like, looks at the map, and he's not an idiot. He looks at the map, and he says, I can't win this. That's either as a third party, and certainly not in a Democratic primary. He never even tried to run in a Democratic primary here in New York. And his support, like, he, you know, the people he's going to take from, his support here in New York depended on Republican voters, first of all. There are no Republican voters in Democratic primaries.
Correct.
His support depended on Republican voters, and it depended on basically well-off whites. We have a candidate, maybe two candidates, for moderate well-off whites. He's going to take from them.
Honestly, for you've laid it out, and it is completely baffling. Like, I mean, because there's no reason why his ego is any greater now than it was 6 months ago.
Could it be just a sense of mortality, though? It's his last chance to do it.
Yeah,
he was
aware of this 6 months ago.
I mean, the other thing is that this, what it means now is it's an expression of concern about Biden's viability.
Yeah.
That's the thing is that I, honestly, if if I was Michael Bloomberg and I secretly wanted Warren or Bernie to win,
yeah,
this is exactly what I would do.
Sure. Yeah.
I would come in, allow all the stories of like, why is Bloomberg jumping in? He said before he had already swallowed his ego, so it can't be ego. It's that he's panicked about Biden. Mm. And then if I actually admit, I don't even have to go in the race. I like just making the leak that they had the other day is enough to take a point or two away from Biden, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And also Buttigieg. Right. Because it's just basically saying like these I'm judging these two are not viable.
Yeah.
If he gets into the race, he's going to certainly hurt them even more.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even make sense for him to be a stalking horse. Like, remember Fred Thompson going into South Carolina to protect McCain?
Yeah, exactly.
Because he said, like, you know, if I can go in there, I'm going to split the vote between, I can't remember who was running against McCain at that point in 2008, but no one was going to come out with a decisive victory in South Carolina because Fred Thompson was in there.
Yeah.
And even that scenario doesn't make sense. Like, if for Bloomberg to attack Bernie or Warren, it's not going to help Biden because it's going to play into Bernie and Warren's whole narrative.
Yeah.
Like, I can't come. This is shocking.
I think maybe we underestimate the degree to which people like Bloomberg do not understand why Warren and Sanders are doing so well.
Yeah.
And in their mind, what they're watching is Biden fail to land any punches and Pete failing to land any punches, and someone like Bloomberg is thinking, get me up there, I'll land some punches, and I'll show them they don't actually want Warren or Sanders.
If you want to plug the deficit hole, you're going to need to tax people's soda drinking. Will no one tell the truth on this stage?
I think that's probably
they are craving a midget billionaire to terrorize them about their spending habits. I don't know what the hell is so hot about this.
I think that it's very possible that people like me completely underestimate just how clueless some of these people are.
You do. I honestly. I don't think Howard Wolfenson and people like this are always lying. Look at their Twitter feeds.
No, I think they very much believe most of what they're saying.
Yeah.
Now, Howard Wolfson, I would imagine, also has some motivated reasons.
Absolutely. Yes.
And I would imagine there's probably, in any given year, 1.7 million motivated reasons.
Look up Steven Rattner. In fact, he's had his own interesting motivating reasoning that has led him to some interesting decisions. But, like, you know, I think a guy like that, again, it's my favorite phrase, overdetermined. People's self-interest. I mean, look, there's motivated reasoning in why I like the Eric Levitz piece, right? Like, we're all susceptible to it. And I think in these people's cases, though, the symmetry between raw self-interest, pure echo chamber, and then the innate immense arrogance. Like, just that's an impenetrable triad. Like, okay, tons of money.
Yeah.
I know we're right. And incidentally, we're the smartest people on the planet.
Right.
What is going to get through that?
I think, like, so much of what we can understand over the past decade, you know, even with the financial crisis, can be explained not by sort of like some type of super secret, you know, nefarious plot, but just by sheer hubris.
Yeah.
That and inability to take the temperature. I mean, I can't remember the name of the guy, but we had figured it out. I got a call in like April of 2015 from a Politico reporter who wanted a quote, who was doing a piece on Martin O'Malley.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was doing this piece on Martin O'Malley and he was asking me this question. Martin O'Malley wants to know how he can convince progressives to support him over Elizabeth Warren. And I was like, Elizabeth Warren? What do you mean? And he's like, well, he wants to know, like, you know, they're with Elizabeth. I said, he's going to worry about Bernie.
Yeah.
And the guy literally started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what? I don't get it. Mm-hmm. And he goes, he's a socialist. And I'm like, I know, but Bernie's got a tremendous amount of energy that is behind him. And he's like, well, okay, whatever. And it was just sort of like, you know, like it was, and I just thought, like, how could you be that off. Like, you follow politics.
I mean, you know, we watched the Chuck Todd segment at the beginning. Like, the cable news is on in the newsrooms of every major national political publication. Just on all
so
day.
Mad. How much do these people get paid?
They go
for
and
their
hanging out. I mean,
they're
hanging out in the green rooms when they're making appearances. Like they're not pretending to be that stupid. And like this is actually kind of the grand conspiracy to never mention Sanders is that a lot of them are still operating under the impression that he is a fluke. With
right,
they are still like, yeah, but that's not real.
Right, I agree with that. I think it's. I honestly think that they're not like, oh, we're going to keep Sanders off there because this is going to diminish his support.
But
I think it's just like,
it's just not part of the reality.
I keep forgetting he's in the race.
Yeah, exactly.
There's just no chance.
It's like
win.
The Westworld characters when you show them something they're not programmed to understand. Like that doesn't look like anything to me.
Doesn't look like anything to me.
A couple of blinks and they just go, what do you mean?
But
I didn't catch that. Anyways, we need to cut entitlements. That's the way you beat Trump. Cut Social Security.
But so, and I, you know, my impression for a lot of like the actually, there was, you should, did you read that fascinating John Harris Politico piece?
No,
actually?
I've got that on my stack. Yeah.
It really was interesting. So, John Harris, the co-founder of Politico, wrote this big piece that it was, first of all, it was very much like, I've been saying this to you for 10 years now, buddy. But he was like, well, you know, I've thought about it, and actually, there's a center-right bias in all of our newsrooms. He was like, actually, right. Like there's just a like pervasive structural center-right bias. Right. And I was like, oh, all right. Thanks.
That's a piece that needs to be widely disseminated because that's the type of thing that like, you know, one of the things about people who work in these type of industries is that there's a lot of like, oh. Right. Like they're looking to see if people
they're
looking
around
to see, next to them. And if that becomes the thing, that would be because in 2004, when I started doing radio, there was a real sense that everybody had just like come to the conclusion that there's a center left or a left wing bias in the newsroom. We need to fight against that.
Yeah,
and to a certain extent, there was a lot of overcompensating because of that.
Yeah, that's actually why the beginning of the Harwood, is that his name? The last Bernie interview with Harwood. And, you know, Harwood's patting himself on the back because I think he's a little bit more astute in his coverage. But they played a clip from 2016 at the same format. And Bernie said, don't underestimate me. And Harwood said, you know, I definitely did. And they laughed about it. And he's like, I think now people are underestimating you. And I think that's another – I mean, I'm glad the Bernie campaign clipped that because I think that's –
People are underestimating Harwood?
No. Harwood said in 2020, in 2016, you were right. I underestimated you. And I think right now in the context of the campaign, I'm not, but a lot of my colleagues are.
Right.
Like, you're in the game here.
Right.
And I'm taking you very seriously.
Just look at what's happened to the New York Times opinion page. You know, like they're trying to represent a conservative opinion. But the mainstream conservative opinion these days is like unprintable racism and conspiracy theories. So and they also don't believe in liberal democracy or like freedom of the press and basic stuff like that. So they bring in people like Barry Weiss who represent basically nobody.
That's true. I mean, I've recently been DMing with the one or two people that she represents. And that's a little bit annoying.
I was going to say, if there are people that she represents, unfortunately, most people, we would be atypically exposed to them.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to get – will you stick around?
I'll stick around.
Matthew Film Guy will give us a recommendation. I know that you have a young child, so you probably never get to go to the movies. The advent of this segment was back when – my second child was born, or even my first child, I couldn't go to the movies. So back then it was a newfangled thing called streaming, where you could stream movies. Mm-hmm. And
I just have to say, we don't know yet, but Lula might be freed today. Obviously, this is meaning quite a bit to me. And quite a bit. I think this story really does have
sort of feels like it's there's a certain inevitability to it over the next couple of days.
I mean, or they really start saying we are formally not doing democracy anymore.
Right. It's going to trigger.
So we'll
see something else.
How it plays. But the Supreme Court finally saying they essentially just – they kicked it to a lower court, though, which is extremely biased. But at any rate, I think it has international implications. And I want to say once again, you know, Glenn Greenwald, this is his second – like NSA spying, and now Lava Jato. And he got hit on television yesterday.
Yeah.
All solidarity.
Yeah, he
with
didn't
Glenn.
Get yeah. in a fight. Yeah, I've, yeah.
No, he yeah. he. Well, he blocked. He had great reflexes. Right. But these idiots are reporting it like he got into a slugfest. Guy assaulted him.
Yeah,
and he protected himself.
The only thing I could think was time for some Krav Maga training on that stuff.
Right.
Because that's exactly the place where that type of stuff
yeah,
works.
You could probably use it. Like literally, the
he
man's
was
in danger.
Found on the same list, the same people who assaulted Marielle Franco. All right. Sorry. It's the Brazil. I'm excited about this. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Quick break. We come back. Matthew Film Guy.
It's just a bad movie where there's no crying. Handing the keys to me in this red lion. Where the lock that you locked in the sweet says there's no prying. When the breath that you breathed in the street screams there's no science. When you look how you looked then to me that I cease. Silence. This is a life story, so there's no climax, no more new territory. So pull away your max in the slot that you sliced through the seam. There was no shyness in. The plot that you passed through your teeth. There was no pity, no faded. Film begins on a kid in the big city. And no cut to a costly parade. That's for him only.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder, The Majority Report. You know, I was saying before the break to Alex Perrine that... back in the day, I would never see movies. I still don't see movies in theaters. But there was this newfangled way of enjoying a movie. And that was when Netflix had moved to like a streaming service where you would actually stream a video over the internet and it wouldn't be all jittery and you didn't have to like basically hand your computer over to some... you know, drug dealers in Southeast Asia on BitTorrent or something to get a hold of a latest movie. And the person that I immediately called to give me a suggestion, well, particularly after I found out that Chris Rosen was not a movie reviewer, but just like an entertainment reporter, that took about a year to figure that out, was the muse of this song. Now, before I say hello to Matthew Filmgoer, I just want to say, Alex, I know what you're thinking, and you're on the cusp. Mm-hmm. Very soon, you're going to get your own theme song.
All right.
And it's going to happen.
All right.
It's going to happen. Somebody out there right now is very busy putting together an Alex Perrine tune.
Incorporate a Bailey's reference, please.
Matthew Filmgoer, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Sam. Hey, everybody. Good to talk to all my fellow PMCs.
Lumpin' PMC represent.
So speaking of your PMCing, Matthew, I think it's been about a month and a half since we spoke, right? Maybe more.
Yeah, just about. I mean, I don't keep track, but I think it's, about 6 weeks or so, about our average. But it's been a while.
And I think last we spoke, you were working on a movie for your overlords in Hollywood. Is that correct?
That is correct. My overlords in Hollywood or Indywood. But yeah, I'm still on that. We're getting towards the end of a really intense process trying to get it out the door for festivals and whatnot. And it's been great. It's been really a dream come true. The movie, by the way, is called Black Bear. And you can look for it hopefully next year.
How about...
Directed by Lawrence Levine.
Yeah.
Starring Aubrey Plaza, Christopher Abbott, and Sarah Gadon. All right. That's my plug.
I know the words Black Bear. Everything else, I didn't know. But I'm obviously highly uneducated when it comes to actors.
Oh, you've never watched Parks and Recreation? I would think that you would like that show.
No, I know. I have friends on that show. I didn't catch it. Because it's not on anymore, right?
No, but you can still watch it. It's about local government.
Right. It's the one with, Amy Poehler. And sometimes Glazer shows up on that show. And
There's a lovable libertarian. You'd love it.
No, I know. You would think it would be something I would like. But half-hour comedies, I just can't. I can't.
They're just not funny. I can't do it.
I can't do it anymore.
There's actually one half-hour comedy. I know I mentioned a lot, but Silicon Valley is genuinely pretty funny.
Oh, it's so good.
I need more narrative. I need more suspense just to keep me awake. But Matthew, tell us about this film. What is this film?
It's kind of a meta thriller. It's got a kind of a high concept two-part structure about a woman who goes to a retreat hosted by a couple that are going through some issues. And it's a little bit in the
I remember a movie like that. Wasn't it like Dan Aykroyd in it? I can't remember what that was.
Yeah, it was called Trading Places.
No.
Nothing But Trouble?
Nothing But Trouble, I think it was, right? Where that couple on that retreat?
Is it's
it
a like remake that? Of Nothing But Trouble, basically. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Okay, Boomer. anyway, I don't want to give too much away, but it's definitely on the dramatic kind of art film side of the indie world, and it's something different for Aubrey Plaza, but she's really good in it. And Chris Abbott, you might know from Girls. He was one of the stars of Girls in the early seasons, and he's in the new Catch-22 TV series. I don't know if you've caught that, Sam, remake the 70s movie.
Now, this is a big deal for you, isn't it? I mean, this is the, besides A Bad Situationist, this is the most prominent project you've ever worked on.
I mean, it's so close, but I think just by a hair, yes, you're right.
Congratulations. It's, you're well,
thank you.
Well earned.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited. Yeah, it's definitely doing what I wanted to be doing for my entire career. And now that you're not making movies, I got to go somewhere else.
No, I understand. I understand. What is your just out of curiosity? What is your footage? What's your ratio? What was the shoot ratio on this?
I mean, we had a pretty tight sort of shooting schedule, but it was like a lot of long takes. Again, it's in that kind of like one location actors kind of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf sort of scenario. So we did a lot of long takes. So it was actually rather high for the movie that we actually have. I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but many several hours to boil it down to about a 100-minute film.
Okay. Many several hours. I don't know how to.
Yeah.
I didn't
know there was going to be math today.
Were you on set? Were you on set? Give people.
I was cutting dailies and syncing stuff, and I was sort of my own assistant while they were there, and I helped with some. We were able to do some reshoots and stuff while I was there due to some of the assemblies I was putting together. So, yeah, I was upstate in that cabin I may have mentioned the last time I was there with you.
And what? Give us what's the budget of this film?
Over $100,000, under $100 million.
Fair enough. Okay, I understand. People got to play this close to the vest because when you go to the festivals, you want to be able to get a high number and you don't want to make it like the you don't want to give a sense to, I don't know who's buying movies, certainly not Harvey Weinstein anymore,
Amazon, Netflix, A24, there's a lot of good places
still
out there.
Did you see that Netflix took down, what's that guy's name,
Hasan Minhaj?
They took down a segment he did on Saudi that the Saudis had complained about.
Yeah.
And
I saw that.
The statement from Netflix
sketchy.
Was, we're not really in the truth to power business.
I mean,
it's absolutely true. It's 100%
true. That is,
that was one of the most
that's
transparent comments I've seen from corporate
America.
That's
the second best thing they could have done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. It's like, at the very least, we'll give you some YouTube content.
Right.
Out of that statement.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and Matthew, just give people a little bit of sense, because I don't know if people have a real sense of like what happens on a movie set. So you go up there now, and one of the things that's great about digital video as a filmmaking tool is that the editor can be logging while the shoot is there and give the director the benefit of knowing that, like, hey, you missed this coverage yep. here, or this that's take right. doesn't work exactly. or something. Explain that to people.
Well, basically, there's a role on the set now. Instead of just your normal ACs, there's someone called the DIT. It's like the digital information technician, and they're taking the cards and loading them into the computer and giving them to the editor that night. Basically, they were shooting all night, overnights, and I would wake up in the morning and I'd have several terabytes of stuff to start going through and syncing and starting to make assemblies of. So, yeah, we were able to really benefit from that by getting in there and reshooting sometimes some pickups, sometimes some actual whole entire scenes. And then sometimes as the, again, this is indie film, so we were on a kind of a tight schedule. But since we didn't have rehearsal time, it allowed us to actually start to discover stuff as we were shooting. And we put somebody together and say, well, maybe it needs to go more in this direction. And they would go back since it was like a one set kind of location. We were able to just pick stuff up as we went along. And I think the movie was definitely made better for that, having that flexibility.
Now, have they come up with a cloud-based solution for script supervision and going to the editors? Because it seems to me that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, well, on the big, really big budget movies, we didn't have this, unfortunately. But on the big budget movies, they actually have software that will like sync to the script, so you'll be able to like find lines within the footage and things like that. So yeah, it's really become an amazing level of sort of like astronaut level technology to be able to edit a film. I benefit from a little bit of that, but we're not quite in that budget level, right?
Things have moment. Changed dramatically in 20 years. And speaking of which, you and I can talk about this off air, but I ran into Joe on the street the other day.
Oh yeah, Joe Klotz. That's uh-huh. cool.
Yep.
Great guy.
All right, does a but we will.
He's still doing stuff. I mean, why yep. take this off air? This is just always so good on air. This kind of stuff.
Well, Matthew edited Bad
what
Situations.
What was craft services like on Bad Situation?
We always had
let
good
me
food.
Tell you, let me tell okay. you.
No,
they
food
were
was
amazing.
Food was that was the that was always my producer Charlie Fisher, who produced my first stuff. We just had a rule. It's like, you do not skimp on food.
Sort of was it a cat's thing that you lay out a bunch of Jewish food for people? Good bagels, matzo balls, knishes, that type of thing?
No.
Okay.
I think Benjamin's character brought his own chopped liver, so that's I think true. We probably benefited.
That's true.
That.
But you never, fantastic. you got to feed people on independent film projects, because that's otherwise you get a mutiny because you're not paying them in the first place. So.
Right.
So, okay. Journalist, so this is dominating your time. What are you doing? You're not, are you selling? Has this cut into your eBay business?
Unfortunately, yes, it actually has. Although I've managed to keep a couple people happy with sending some stuff out in the past few months. But yeah, it is definitely cutting into my main pursuit, which is selling detritus that I used to own on eBay. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And are
somehow
you
I'll find a way to get over it.
Are you still teaching your Learning Annex film class to the elderly folks at the JCC?
I am. I just picked that back up at the Central Queens YWHA, and in fact, this week I had about a month off, so I came back in a big way, and I wound up showing them the first movie by a Belgian filmmaker named Chantal Ackerman. You maybe have heard me talk about on the show before. I don't know, crickets. Anyway,
right?
He said it was
I'm
about
blowing,
incest,
I'm
but really capitalism.
One movie at a
he
time,
shows
I can
us very
you.
Disturbing films.
I had a couple of them say, like, why were we here this week? Why?
Why can't we see something nice like Sleepless in Seattle? Did you ever see that film? I love that Meg Ryan.
Yeah, something like that. No, I managed to keep it interesting. It's the lecture at the end that really keeps them coming back.
No, I have no doubt about it. So, all right. Well, Film Guy Matthew, that brings us to, yeah. of course, the obvious question.
Let's get to it.
What should I pretend that I'm going to watch this week?
Well, I think this week you should pretend, and also Alex and everybody else in the studio, you know, you guys have kids, so maybe you want to try more of an adult film with adult themes, not necessarily explicit sex, but...
I don't know. I've seen Wreck-It Ralph 2 now 5 times.
I think this week I want to recommend a movie by a group of filmmakers, two brothers, who are doing some of the best American indie films, sort of in the 70s tradition, the really stalwart independent film tradition. Ben and Josh Safdie. I don't know if have I ever talked about their movies with you before. I can't remember.
I don't think so.
They made a series of movies. One was called Good Time with Robert Pattinson. But I want to recommend an earlier movie of theirs called Heaven Knows What. And it is basically in the tradition of the sort of New York street people kind of genre, a little bit like Kids, but not quite as exploitative. But it's a drama based on the unpublished memoir of a woman who was homeless, living on the streets in New York City, and she was actually spotted panhandling by one of the Safdie brothers, and he developed her story into this film. And they actually also wound up casting, like, actual people who had been homeless formerly or even currently. This guy, Buddy Duress, is basically, like, the discovery of the film, and he's kind of has the tragic story. He's sort of, like, in and out of Rikers, and he couldn't even go to the premiere of this movie because has outstanding sort of drug issues. But he gives one of the most singular film performances of maybe the last 20 years, playing her boyfriend, who's sort of the ne'er-do-well heroin addict, Mike. And he went on to do some other film work, too, but this is like his starring moment. And it's basically shot on the streets of New York. I don't want to say it's a kind of happy ending, but it definitely has sort of a positive message, and it's just some of the most I think uncompromising filmmaking. These guys are the real deal. They're not sort of pseudo art filmmakers. They're committed to this and develop the movie with the actors, which is always something that I really appreciate. Filmmakers with the guts and the instincts to be able to do that. Cinematography by Sean Price Williams, who's one of the great indie film DPs, and I just think anybody that's looking for like something that, you know, the kind of movies that Martin Scorsese is railing about never being made anymore, well, these guys are making this kind of movie. Heaven Knows What, also co-written by Ronald Brownstein, who made Frownland, one of my favorite indie movies of the past 20 years. So I think this is a winner on all counts.
It's just sort don't of, show it to your kids. It's surprising. It was made in 2014 because New York doesn't feel like that to me anymore. Like, you know, like when Kids was made, that made sense. And to a certain extent, that was, you know, still like sort of the last vestige of that New York, it seems to me. But like, where do you go in New York now to find a culture like this? Obviously, there's still a tremendous amount of homeless folks and young people who are out on their own, but it doesn't have the same sort of like feel like there was an actual like culture. Or am I wrong?
Well, I can't say I have firsthand knowledge of that culture, but this film definitely makes the case that it is still there. And actually, one of the interesting things about the way the action is portrayed, it's all very close up, but if you're a New Yorker, you can always sort of tell, okay, they're at Tompkins Square Park, they're at Union Square, they're uptown, they're downtown. And it really shows that these people, they shot the movie out in the open on the street, and this is the kind of movie they didn't have the budget to like shut down the whole street. And it really kind of makes the case through its style that you're just walking by these people. They're still there. You may not see them to the same effect or extent that it maybe in the 70s or the 80s you were, but they are still there. They are still kind of in and out of, you know, Starbucks bathrooms and behind bodegas and finding places to actually, you know, make a life for themselves.
That sounds
But they are there, and in a way that, you know, if you've moved to New York in the 90s, maybe you just never got to really see it up close and personal. But that's one of the, I think, things to recommend this movie is to demonstrate that maybe we've swept them under the rug a little bit, but this is still an issue. There are still drug addicts and homeless people in New York that, you know, that are struggling.
In some ways, more hostile environment, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, a lot of the drama is about, like, a woman who's tried to help these people and takes them in, but sort of, like, the sort of the downside of that kind of help and being, you know, I don't know, maybe pigeonholed. I don't want to give too much away about the action, but it's highly recommended if you've got the stomach for kind of a face full of this kind of truth.
A face full of this kind of truth.
They had a movie out this year that because we were talking about we don't get to go to the theaters anymore, but they had a movie out this year, right? the Adam Sandler one they had out, right?
Well, yeah, that's their new film. I haven't seen that yet. I don't know if that got a general release yet, but yeah, Uncut Gems.
Oh, that looks super good.
It looked good. I think my friends liked it. My friends who go to the movies loved it.
What was that?
Uncut Gems, right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Uncut Gems. No, it's not. It's not out yet. It just played a bunch of festivals.
Oh, yeah. So I guess my film critic friends have seen it.
The story of that movie is that they were developing that movie, and they ran into this guy, Buddy Duress, on the street while they were scouting that movie, and they stopped. They paused that movie to make this movie. After running into this girl and meeting him, and it just became easier to make this movie in between. And I guess eventually they went back to making Uncut Gems. But so this movie, heaven knows what, it kind of has like that leapt out of them kind of feel, because they just like had to make it while they had these two people.
There feels like there's a lot more of that going on. Like I remember when Sondheim did that, right? When he was it Stephen Sondheim? Was that
who?
Not Sondheim. The guy who
musical
did
musical director. The
no,
musical
no,
theater?
No, no. The
Soderbergh.
Soderbergh.
Soderbergh. Yeah. Remember Soderbergh did like I can't remember what movie it was. Now, in between all the other movies he was doing, that was like.
He had that kind of like one for the studios, one for myself.
Yeah,
for a while.
Thinking about Bubble.
No, I can't remember what it was.
That was one. That was one of the smaller ones. Also, one of my favorite movies of his is The Limey. That was
I like that one.
Karen Stamp.
I can't remember what it was now, but
You know, these guys, they're prolific. They don't just make two movies and call it quits, you know.
Excuse me.
These guys make many movies, as many as they can, while they can. That's, you know. Did I say something? Or?
I still got time, buddy. Still could come back. Still could come back for me.
Well, if you need an editor, you know where to find me.
Yeah, now you're gonna be priced out of my range, though. That's the problem. Folks, heaven knows what, a great way to prepare yourself for the gem movie about the gems.
Yeah. I'll watch it before.
Yeah.
I'll watch it in preparation.
I mean, I know that wasn't your point. But
all the Safdie Brothers movies, I highly recommend. They've made about maybe less than half a dozen movies now, and they're all great.
That's awesome. Well, Film Guy Matthew, thank you for taking time. When are you going to be done with this project you're working on?
My pleasure. By the end of the year, we're gonna be totally done and out there sometime, probably mid December, end of December. We, you know, I have to finish, and then they do the sound mix and the color correct and all.
Are they applying for what would it be? I guess Sundance. Are they going to make the Sundance deadline for 2020 or what?
We're aiming for Sundance, you know, all the big ones.
Isn't Toronto's right now, though, right? Toronto's now, though, or soon.
We're on top of it, Sam. Don't worry. We got to cover Tribeca.
My point is I want to time it so that when you're out at one of these festivals, we can actually talk to you there and get a sense of like,
that would be
like
awesome. Well, I will keep you posted. I mean, there's no guarantee. There's thousands of people who apply and only like a couple dozen get in, but I would appreciate that. And I'll take you up on that when it happens.
All right. Very well. Matthew Film Guy, ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
All right, folks, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go into the fun half, and then we'll have an hour to go over some more stuff, talk more maybe a little bit about the campaign. We can talk about one of the big showdowns of the week, of the month, maybe of the year, where Donald Trump Jr. squares off with with John McCain Jr.
It's like Buckley and Vidal.
Exactly. Wow. It's huge. It's pretty nuts. And we'll talk a little bit about the judiciary, which is now just sort of, you know, Donald Trump could get out of office tomorrow, and the implications of what has happened to the judiciary will resonate well past his death. I'm assuming he's going to live a long, natural, healthy life,
mm-hmm.
as befitting someone of his stature and ilk and whatnot.
Thank you.
What did I do with that?
A lot of people say the first person to live to 150 has already been born.
Transhumanist Donald Trump would be an incredible.
You know, there was that would be. I'm just gonna merge. There was actually there was a precursor. You read Kurzweil?
More
guys
people
at Google.
Are
that's a
about
big
him.
Brain.
It's a singularity.
It's a big brain. And it used to be you have to clear homeless people off the street with the police. Now you can do it with a delete button. It's an incredible future, folks.
Hey, folks, before we go, remember, when you shop, when you bank, when you browse online, your personal information gets out there. Thankfully, Norton 360 with LifeLock is an all-in-one membership for your cyber safety. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime or identity theft, but Norton 360 with LifeLock is a powerful ally to help protect you in today's connected world. Sign up today for a Norton 360 with LifeLock membership, and as our listener, you will save 25% or more off your first year at Norton.com/majority. That's Norton.com/majority. Norton.com/majority for 25% off. I've had LifeLock now, I don't know, for 6 to 8 months. And I got to admit, it really does give me a certain peace of mind just to get that text that like somebody's dinging my my credit check or my computers are secure. It's very helpful. And a reminder, this show relies on the support of folks like you. When you become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com, not only do you get the free show commercial free, not only are you supporting the free show, we give you extra content every day. Yes. And so you get to go around saying that you're a Majority Report member. And you're also supporting those folks who can't afford a membership and who write me at majorityreporters@gmail.com, and then they wait, and they wait, and they wait, and we hook them up with some type of deal for their membership. So join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Today is Friday. Someday prior to today, during this week, was a Tuesday. Michael, what happened on that evening?
I interviewed Adolph Reed Jr. and Abby Martin, and then Nando Vila came in for the post game. We talked about Maradona and Fidel Castro, what's happening in Bolivia. Next week, instead of Tuesday, we have a Monday show because of logistics. And Richard Wolff is going to return. We're going to talk about the Soviet Union, the 18th Brumaire by Marx, and then Brumaire.
Love the 18th Brumaire.
It's great. Everybody does. And a lot of people have been speaking about it.
Everyone says it's the best.
It is actually highly quotable. That's actually probably why so many people are speaking about it, because you don't actually have to read it.
No.
Shahid Buttar, who I think his candidacy, I mean, there's a ton of progressives that we should support, challenging right-wing Democrats like Michaela Wilkes. But I think Nancy Pelosi makes... she really needs to be defeated, like even if that is like a 5% possibility. And it just so happens that Shahid is an extraordinary candidate, right? So he's actually going to be in studio for a little bit. We're going to talk about this new Tony Blair Global Initiative report on digital technology and how he would actually take on regulating the Silicon Valley economy. So patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube tonight, event at Yale. Get your tickets to the Philadelphia Live Show November 23rd and November 22nd, moderating a Jackman panel, Crystal Ball and Matt Carp.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, Sean is joined by two of his fellow building tradesmen, Billy O'Connor and John Torney, to do a little workers' inquiry on themselves. They discuss their own work histories and how they became radicalized through historical events, as well as their own experiences on the job. They poke holes in the J.D. Vance white working class mythos that sees cultural regression as the wellspring of Trumpism rather than material conditions. And lastly, they talk about the structures they've encountered in their particular unions and how the working class might overcome the provincialism and conservatism of business unionism. And that's out for free for everybody to listen to. Also, for our patrons, there is a premium offering today. wherein Sean and Billy O'Connor talk a little bit more and share some stories about union organizing and getting your head chopped off and left in the swamp.
Is Billy O'Connor a real name?
It is. That's it is awesome. Indeed. He needs his own podcast. Just like,
yeah, I'm a working guy. So
no, he's
Billy O'Connor.
He's like such a good salt of the earth New Jersey Marxist. You love to see it.
You do. That actually sounds great.
Yeah.
Literary Hangover, check out my Salem Witch Trials episode. We're doing a episode on the Restoration era female woman writer, first professional playwright as a woman in Britain, Aphra Behn, who was also a spy, and they're talking about her novel Orinoco or the Royal Slave. How do you get a royal slave?
We'll gotta keep out. A very close eye on female playwrights.
Seems to be polar opposites.
A lot of them are spies.
Feels like it's the truth. All right, folks, see you in the fun half. Alex is going to stick with us.
Mm-hmm.
Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.